Last week, a judge in DuPage County did vacate the convictions of William Amore, who's been a client of the Illinois Innocence Project since 2011. Bill was convicted of first-degree murder in the course of a supposed arson. The judge made what is a historic ruling. There have been just a handful of cases in the country, and this is the first one in Illinois where a judge has found that the traditional testimony that came from fire, so-called experts, was not valid and not reliable.
Was this a case where perhaps it wasn't a murder at all?
This is one of those cases that is becoming part of a trend in exonerations. One of the trends is that of people who have been exonerated, an increasing trend is in what we call no crime cases, where no crime actually occurred. A fire sometimes is set by accident or occurs by accident. There was a rush to judgment, we believe, in this case, and frankly, the trial judge agreed that the science that was used was not valid. But to me, the most interesting part of this case is that the prosecution, about a year or so ago, called ATF in Washington, D.C., and asked for the ATF, certainly an arm of law enforcement, to send their arson expert here to examine this case. Their expert came here, met with Mr. Moore, and while he concluded, this expert concluded, that there probably was an arson, he also concluded that Bill Amore could not have been in the house when any fire was set, if that in fact occurred. He concluded also that Amore's statement, the statement that was attributed to him, therefore was a false confession. That stands out to me, the fact that their experts said, Bill Amore, there's no way he could have been in the house.
And so remind us to date how many exonerations the Illinois Innocence Project has helped, and also maybe tell us just a little bit about what clients you're still working on, hopefully exonerating.
The Illinois Innocence Project has had 10 cases, 10 clients freed due to innocence, actual innocence. I think that's important for people to understand. What does that mean, actual innocence? That they got the wrong person, period, all the way around. So we've had 10 cases of people being released, exonerated due to actual innocence over the years. Four of those have been in the last 2 years. So as we continue to build our shop, and we now have 4.5 lawyers who work for us, doing great work, two in Chicago and the others down here. One of the challenges for us at the project is, frankly, that DNA testing is very expensive. We've run the numbers, and on the last three DNA exonerations, the total cost of the testing alone, not including anybody else's time or anything like that, just the cost that was paid to the lab to do the testing was over $100,000. Now that's in three cases. We have 2,300 applications for assistance. It's mind-boggling. And so there is a huge need. We need to be very, very picky in the cases. We have to be very picky in terms of resources and in terms of the cases that we take. We have several other cases right now. And by the way, out of those 2,300 applications for assistance, we're actively working, at my last count, 41 cases right now. Pretty small percentage. And that's between, as I said, four and a half lawyers. And we have some lawyers in this community and elsewhere who give us some pro bono assistance. I don't want to discount that in the slightest. We would not be where we are without the support of the University of Illinois Springfield and its students, its administration and its students. We have had, it's really heartwarming to me, we've had about 75 students since 2010. They know more about the cases at the beginning than we do because they're the ones who obtain the documents, read the documents, read the client's correspondence and application to us, and then they inform us, the lawyers, about the case, and then the lawyers take it from there.
You're listening to Illinois Edition. I'm Rachel Otwell. I'm joined now by Executive Director of the Illinois Innocence Project, John Hanlon. So tell us about the initiative for the Police Training Institute.
We're really fortunate to be on the cutting edge of police training in this country vis-a-vis innocence projects. So let me explain. We know of the problems that have occurred in this country between citizens in the community and police. For a while, we saw it every day on television or heard reports every day. And again, not taking sides, that there's an issue there somewhere. I think it's also pretty widely recognized that the training for police officers is very important. Right now, there are only 4 innocence organizations doing any training across the country, and we're one of those 4. The project in New York, the Innocence Project, Innocence Project of New Orleans, which is a big endeavor as well, and the Northern California Innocence Project is also a fairly substantial size project. And this came about when the director of one of the 5 police training institutes in Illinois took one of our courses over the summer, a few summers ago. He then contacted our office and said that he wanted his recruits to hear about issues that pertain to avoiding wrongful convictions. I have to give Mike Schlosser credit, a lot of credit, for having that boldness. Mike is a cop's cop. I mean, if somebody is guilty, he's going to be all over it. That's been his career. But he also wants to expose young police officers to the types of issues and train them on the types of issues that can cause a lack of understanding but in the types of evidence that lead to wrongful convictions, such as interrogations, such as lineups and how lineups are conducted, such as the concept of confirmation bias or tunnel vision, which has proven to be an issue in wrongful convictions. But mostly, the young police officers like hearing from our exonerees, and we've taken several exonerees before them, and it's a fascinating experience to see the officers interact with a person who's been in prison for something they didn't do. We've trained, by my very rough count, about 190 police officers so far.
So we're on the UIS campus, of course, and that's where the Illinois Innocence Project, formerly the Downstate Illinois Innocence Project, is also based. And I was lucky enough as a student to take a class on wrongful convictions. But now there's an opportunity for people who maybe aren't even enrolled at UIS to take a free course on exploring the innocence movement. So tell us a little bit about that.
The university offers a series of what are called MOOC, M-O-O-C, courses, which is a massive online open course. We had one such course a couple of years ago. It's still available online, free. Just search Illinois Innocence Project, and it's linked. The course is linked to our homepage, our webpage. And if you are interested in this topic, we cover it from A to Z. Including a lot of interesting aspects in the sense of interviews with exonerees, telling about their personal experiences, and interviews with some of the top innocence organization personnel in the country, and so I think people would find it worth their while if they're interested at all in this topic.
That is John Hanlon of the Illinois Innocence Project. And so we spoke with you last September, and we talked about how the state's budget impasse affecting exonerees who, you know, according to state law, are due compensation for their wrongful imprisonment and the time they served. And the budget impasse was making that difficult. So can you give us an update on where things stand?
Well, unfortunately, the situation with getting exonerees compensated is still stuck where it was last summer because there's still no budget. There are 18, I think that's the last count, 18 men who have awards from the Illinois Court of Claims to compensate them for having spent years and years and years in the Illinois Department of Corrections. 2 of these people are our clients. And so we deal, frankly, every day with the challenges that they have just in, you know, getting by with the most basic needs of their lives. So we're hopeful that something is something breaks on this, either broadly in terms of the state budget. We know that there are a lot of people hurting. Our concern, of course, is specifically on the exonerees. We hope that something breaks there. But if it doesn't, we have a bill pending right now in the legislature that would essentially allow the exonerees to be paid even though there is not a broader state budget.
You have another piece of legislation that's pending at the Capitol proposal?
We do. We have another bill that's pending right now that we're pretty excited about. And that bill pertains to jailhouse informants. And the idea of the bill is a few things. Jailhouse informants have proven historically in this state and elsewhere to be a significant contributing factor to people being wrongfully convicted. And the law, though, at this time, does not allow a defense attorney at a trial to discover anything about that witness other than their criminal history and when the statement was made and under what conditions, that sort of thing. If I'm an attorney defending a guy at the trial level, what do I want to know the most about their informant? I want to know his history. I want to know how long, perhaps, he's been working with this county prosecutor or with the people in the jail. I want to know how many times he's hit the stand and testified before. The truth is that there are repeat customers in terms of jailhouse informants, and the defense attorneys don't have the legal right to know that right now. This bill would allow for that to happen. It would also create a reliability hearing prior to a trial, meaning that before the prosecution would be able to put a jailhouse informant on the stand, that the judge would get to hear from that person and to attempt to assess the issue of reliability. And we understand crimes need to be solved. And sometimes, prosecutors, if a jailhouse informant comes to their knowledge, to their attention, they are going to use that. I think it's a diminishing type of evidence. I think prosecutors, to their credit, are using this a little bit less. But every time I say that, I see something like a story that I saw over the weekend about an informant, not in this state, but an informant who's paid $300,000 plus for his services over the years. That's just wrong. If I'm on a jury, I would find that kind of evidence to be very, very relevant toward the lack of reliability.
On a broader scope, how has the new Trump administration affected your field of work and the things that you are concerned about as executive director of the Illinois Innocence Project?
I'm concerned a number of ways about how this might affect innocence efforts and organizations in general. To the credit of the Justice Department over the last 8 years, they did a lot of work to put together commissions to study the various problems, and the results were astounding. The report from the NAS, National Academy of Sciences, in 2009 told us that as to all of these areas, there has been a lack of proper scientific research. Concepts of science are so important to the innocence movement and to the truth. I'm very concerned about how suspending the Forensic Science Commission, it's just a bad message, and it's a bad outcome for all of us who are concerned about the truth.
And so looking ahead as well, a couple events that the Illinois Innocence Project has coming up. The end of the month, there will be the 10th annual Defenders of the Innocent fundraiser, really, because a lot of what you guys raise comes from donations. There's not a ton of grant money out there, I'm assuming, for your efforts. So tell us about that.
The Defenders of the Innocent, as we call it, awards and a banquet dinner is on Saturday, April 29th. It's at the Crown Plaza Hotel in Springfield. I would advise people to get their spot reserved sooner than later, because the numbers, as I'm hearing them, are really astounding. And this year, our featured guest is a young man named Yusef Salaam. Yusef Salaam was one of the so-called Central Park Five in the so-called Central Park jogger rape, horrible case. Five young men from 14 to 16 years old who were taken into custody by the New York police and interrogated. And again, I'll say five young men from 14 years old to 16 years old. Police obtained a series of false confessions from these gentlemen. They've all been fully exonerated. We know that they were false confessions because the DNA of the guy who really attacked this woman was found on her sock. And the guy was, again, to no surprise, a repeat criminal of this sort of crime. It's a very very troubling case, and it was put back in the news by the current occupant of the White House in the fall when he said that these five young guys should have all received the death penalty. He later walked back his death penalty comment, but completely refused to recognize that these men were all proven innocent, again, by science. It's a wonderful night. Those who have gone before tell me consistently that it's something that they always remember.
And then in relation to the guest speaker, there will be a documentary film screening free and open to the public on Wednesday.
The documentary movie, The Central Park Five, is a wonderful documentary. It's hard to watch some of it, but it's a wonderful documentary, acclaimed documentary, that we will be displaying at the Hoagland, third floor of the Hoagland, on Wednesday, April 12th. It's a free event. I will say that the room is somewhat limited. Seating is going to be somewhat limited. We're going to do the best we can to put lots of chairs and risers into the room. But if people want to go, I suggest they show up early.
All right. We've been speaking with John Hanlon of the Illinois Innocence Project. We've covered a lot. So if you need more information, we will also link you at illinoisedition.org. Thanks for coming in today, John.
You're welcome.
And for Illinois Edition, I'm Rachel Otwell.